The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
How Democrats and Cartels Are Abusing Children on the Border, a Good Friday reflection. And attorney Sidney Powell joins me to talk about all the things we're not supposed to talk about. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I'm becoming increasingly angry, furious even, at the crisis involving children on the southern border. This is child abuse, and it is child abuse that is being perpetrated not just by the cartels and the criminal elements on the Mexican side of the border, but also by the Biden administration and the Democrats and the left. You may say that they're in it together. The children are the victims, and these are the perpetrators. Now, this may seem like a bit of an extreme assessment, and it goes beyond the tragedy that even the media now is admitting to. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection just released a video. I'm going to play a small clip from it. It's just a few seconds long, but it involves the tossing of two toddlers over the fence into the U.S. side of the border by smugglers who then just take off. Take a look. What you see here is you see these guys, and they're starting to approach the fence, and they've got in their possession these two toddlers. And what do? They release them over the fence. Kids, I mean, babies, basically. And then look at them. There they go. They take off. And that's it. The kids are now in America, and that's how it goes. This is absolutely horrific. I mean, try to imagine yourself as that frightened, terrified kids. Now, the press that has been getting a chance for the first time, after a lot of media blockages, the Biden administration is now letting press go to these temporary border facilities, one in Donna, Texas, for example. And here's a little thread. They talk about migrant children are now being held, 615 of them. The facility is at 1,700% pandemic capacity. So think of the health risks in addition to the jammed conditions of these children. Unaccompanied minor children ages 4 to 9 years old are now being held in the recreational area around the clock because there's no room for them in the dormitory facility. So we're creating third world conditions or worse in this country for these kids. At least 39 unaccompanied migrant children have been in the temporary processing facility for 15 days. According to Acting Executive Officer Oscar Escamarilla, the legal limit is 72 hours. Raul Ortiz, Deputy Chief of U.S. Border Patrol, told reporters that agents are now seeing self-separation by families. Unaccompanied migrant children recross the border without their parents so they can seek legal asylum within the United States. So the parents come with the kids, the parents are turned away with the kids, and the kids go, well, you know what? We'll cross on our own. So you have small kids who can in no way can look after themselves, but nevertheless are being sent back across the border. Pool reporters stumbled upon 27 unaccompanied migrant children and young families outside of Mission, Texas. So this is all over the southern border, not just in Texas, but also in Arizona and elsewhere. So what's really going on here? We have to sort of think about it to grasp the full invidiousness of the problem. The problem is that these kids are now part of a market. The kids are tokens or pawns. You could also call them human passports. Why? Because you need the kid to be able to make the illegal crossing work. So because of the Biden administration's, oh, we're very humanitarian, we care about the kids. So the cartels have figured out, wonderful. All we do is grab a kid off the streets of Tijuana or anywhere in South America, deposit the kid with an adult, and kid and adult now get to cross. The kid becomes, as I say, the human passport. Now, what does this remind you of? This smuggling operation, this kidnapping operation. I mean, imagine what it might be like if you were a kid. You're a poor kid on the streets of Tijuana. You are right now in mortal danger of being kidnapped away from your parents by smugglers, coyotes, or cartel members. Why? Because you have suddenly become a desired commodity. Commodity is the right term. You're not a human being. They don't care about you, but you are the mechanism. You are the cash cow that's going to enable somebody who has paid $4,000 or $7,000, not even necessarily a Mexican. It could be an Iranian. It could be an Asian. Someone who wants to illegally cross and has paid the price is now going to use this kid as the means to do it. Now, look, I'm a little familiar with this kind of exploitation, admittedly in a different context. You remember the movie Slumdog Millionaire, where they take that kid, and what do? They punch out his eyes. They blind him. Why? Because he's more useful as a beggar who's blinded. An ordinary kid, well, there are lots of ordinary kids, but a blind kid with all kinds of deformities on your face, that's going to stimulate more compassion. It's going to make people give more money. Of course, the kid doesn't keep the money. The kid has to turn the money over to some beggar operation that's organized all this. And look at the cruelty, the cynical exploitation of children. Well, it's the same thing. So I grew up around this. I recognize it. I know how it is when you have these nasty, wicked people, adults, who take advantage of children for their own financial gain. Well, if we turn to the Biden administration, they are not the innocent party here. Why? Because they benefit from this operation too. That's why they let it go on. They could put a stop to it. Trump put a stop to it. The reason they don't want to put a stop to it is it benefits them politically. So the cartels are in it for the money, but the Biden administration is in it for the votes, for the potential future votes, for the political benefit, to be able to portray themselves as being, you know, oh, we're so marvelously compassionate. Nonsense. Why nonsense? Because when you have exploitation going on like this, and it is the foreseeable consequences of your actions, then you're to blame. You're responsible. Let's think of a couple of analogies to see why this is obviously the case. You're a driver. You're joyriding on the highway. You're going 90 miles an hour. Now, you hit somebody. But here's the difference. It's not an accident. It's not like, whoa, I just hit someone. I had no idea there was someone on the freeway. What if you can see that there are children ahead of you who are playing dangerously close to the road? But you don't slow down. You still continue to joyride. Well, hitting them is now the foreseeable consequence of your actions. And therefore, this isn't, strictly speaking, manslaughter, because you could see them. They didn't just dash out on the road. So the point here being that the Biden administration, by inviting, by basically saying, yeah, of course, you know, it's going to be, you got a kid, you're going to come across the border, by stating that as the rationale. And by the way, you may not even have a court date. If things get too crowded, we're just going to let you go. Gone. You're in the United States. You now have a life in America. You can dump the kid. The kid was just the passport to get there. You don't need your passport once you're in America. Now, this is the exploitation that's going on. Oh, consider a hunter. A hunter goes out there and goes, listen, you know what? I see the bushes. The bushes are moving. I'm just going to fire randomly into the bushes. Whoops, I killed somebody. No, that's not an accident per se. Why? Because it was the foreseeable consequence of your behavior. You should have known. It's not that so hard to figure out that if you fire randomly into bushes where there are people, other hunters for one, milling around, you are going to hurt or kill somebody. And by the same logic here, the Biden administration could easily see. They're not stupid. Biden's stupid, but not the people around him. The ones who are organizing this operation knew full well that it would, that the gangs would get involved, that this would become a horror show. But they were like, it's worth it. because it pays off for us politically. The bottom line, these are wicked people who are part of a collaborative scheme, a scheme that now works kind of like the two sides of a scissors between the cartels on the one hand, who are in it for the money, and the equally cynical and ruthless Democrats who are in it for the politics. Both parties are engaged in systematic, institutional, and continuing horrifying child abuse. Hey, are you excited about Mike Lindell's new social media platform? It's going to be called Frank. I'm excited to see how it develops. I'm also excited about Mike's products, his MyPillow merchandise. I want to talk to you today about his Giza Dream Sheets. The team at MyPillow is grateful for you. They have an amazing offer. Buy one, get one free on their incredible sheet sets. Mike Lindell has come out with the world's most comfortable bed sheets. He found the best cotton in the world in a region where the Sahara Desert, the Nile River, and the Mediterranean Sea all come together to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. His new Giza Dream bed sheets are made with this long staple cotton. Mike guarantees, and I guarantee, they'll be the most comfortable sheets you'll ever own. The first night you sleep on them, you'll never want to sleep on anything else. The Giza Dream sheets are available in a variety of colors. Like all of Mike's products, they come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Right now, you can buy one, get one free by calling 800-876-0227 and use promo code Dinesh, D-I-N-E-S-H. For a limited time, buy one, get one free, 800-876-0227, or go to MyPillow.com. But make sure to use promo code Dinesh. Isn't it unbelievable that there is a big uproar on the left, and in fact, from some huge corporations, over Georgia's law that establishes requirements for voter integrity? It's being portrayed as voter suppression. It's making it harder for people to vote. And let's think about this. I mean, interestingly enough, in American elections, the prospect of dead people voting, no uproar over that. The prospect of people who are out of state casting a vote nevertheless, no uproar over that. The prospect over people using illicit social security numbers, other people's numbers to vote, no uproar about that. The prospect of sending in dubious mail-in ballots that later have to be cured by calling the voter and adding an address or changing what was written on the ballot, no uproar over that. But on the simple matter that you have to show an ID to vote, big uproar. Voter ID has suddenly become, quote, controversial. And just the imbalance of this, the insanity of it, is the first thing we have to take note of. Now, let's look for a moment at Georgia's law, because while it's being portrayed as a revival of Jim Crow, I mean, let's remember, first of all, what Jim Crow was. Here's Jim Crow. You don't get to vote at all. Or you have to pay a poll tax. Or you are prevented from standing in line along with the white guy standing next to you. Or, to pursue Jim Crow further, you can't stay at the same hotel as that white guy. You have your own hotel. You can't eat at the same restaurant. You can get your hair cut by a white barber. You've got to go to a black barber. So this is Jim Crow. Does this bear any resemblance to what's going on in Georgia? Not at all. Here's what Georgia said. They've established a voting system that is actually far more favorable in terms of ease of access than many Democratic states. 15 mostly Democratic states are more restrictive on absentee ballots than Georgia. Let's take Connecticut. Let's take Biden's home state of Delaware. They have no early voting at all. New Jersey has a driver's license requirement, or you have to provide the last four digits of your social security number, even for online voter registration. Virginia requires both a photo ID card and your social security number. California also has ID requirements to register. Now, Georgia is establishing a registration requirement. It requires voters to provide the number and birth date on their state-issued photo ID card. But if you don't have a voter ID card, you can get one for free. So this is Georgia. It is actually a sensible, moderate, non-intrusive reform bill that Georgia put in place, evidently because of the belief that things were not conducted in the ideal or even the proper manner the last time around. And yet we now see, and this is a remarkable sight, we see these corporate leaders, both the CEO of Delta Airlines and the chief officer of Coke, both based, by the way, in Georgia. Now, these people have been heavily lobbied by the left. And so here is Ed Bastian, this CEO of Delta. I'm quoting him on the Georgia Law. "I need to make it crystal clear that the final bill is unacceptable. The entire rationale for this bill was based on a lie that there was widespread voter fraud in Georgia in the 2020 elections. This is simply not true." First of all, how would he know? How would he know? Here you've got the CEO of Delta Airlines sitting in his office talking about airline schedules, presumably dealing with the problems that airlines are facing under COVID. He is pontificating there was no fraud. Now, it is one thing to say that the Trump people were not able to prove the fraud. They didn't have a forum to do it. The courts rejected on standing grounds or procedural grounds, or you should have made your case earlier. It is entirely different to say that there is no fraud. It's kind of like the difference between me saying there's life on other planets. I believe there's life on other planets. You say, hey, Dinesh, that's not proven. There's no substantial evidence that there's life on other planets. And I go, yeah, that's true. But it doesn't follow from that that there's no life on other planets. There very well could be. It very well could be that the evidence will come forth. It doesn't logically follow from there's no evidence for something that something does not exist. And yet here you have an airline guy declaring with certitude that that's simply not true. Of course, he's just echoing what he's read. So he's pretending to be in a position to know. In fact, he doesn't know. And here is, by the way, the CEO of Coca-Cola, James Quincy, talking about the Georgia law. Listen.
This legislation is unacceptable. It is a step backwards, and it does not promote principles we have stood for in Georgia around broad access to voting, around voter convenience, about ensuring election integrity. And this is frankly, just a step backwards.
I'm actually laughing at the guy because you got a British guy. Now, first of all, this very same guy and Delta itself, Coca-Cola itself, Delta and Coca-Cola were involved in the process of this reform. Delta even said early on that they approved of the steps that Georgia was taking in order to sort of clean up the process. And now you got this British guy. I mean, first of all, it's hard for me to believe he's even all that sincere. I mean, I would really like to hear what he said to his wife when the cameras were off. He probably goes, "My dear, this is so ridiculous. The stuff I've got to tell these Americans with a straight face. It's absurd." So I have a feeling that you've got a guy who says one thing. He plays all the right violin notes. Ooh, do, 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 do. But then the moment the cameras are off, that's when we get to hear what he really thinks. Now, these people aren't dumb. And not to mention of the fact that they know all about ID requirements. And you know why? Because they use them. Delta requires ID to fly. I can't get on a Delta plane. I'm a brown-skinned guy. I can't get on without an ID. Does it follow that Delta is trying to discourage blacks and persons of color from flying? If requiring an ID to vote is voter suppression, is Delta engaging in travel suppression? I mean, if I show up at Delta and they won't let me get on, should I say, "You racist pigs! Why are you asking for my ID? Let me on board!" Or I go to the doctor. "Let me through! Why should I turn off my ID? It's bigoted to ask me to do it. Or I will go to buy alcohol. I refuse to show my ID. Give me the whiskey. Let me in." I mean, this is madness. If requiring an ID to vote is voter suppression, then is requiring an ID to buy an AK or to buy a gun Second Amendment suppression? Think about it. If you're making it difficult in any way to do something, and it follows that you are suppressing that thing, then our constitutional rights are being suppressed anytime there is any ID requirement whatsoever, to buy a firearm. And when I come back, I'm going to talk in a little more detail about the absurdity of the case against voter ID. My podcast is sponsored by Dr. Douglas Howard and his incredible team at Balance of Nature. This is important for you to know because I want you to discover what I did. You must eat your fruits and vegetables. If you're not getting enough fruits and vegetables, you're not as healthy as you can be. Your immune system won't be as strong as it should be. And you're not going to ward off the bad stuff like your body should. Those six little Balance of Nature capsules ensure you get the equivalent of 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies. Give your immune system a fighting chance. Balance of Nature ensures you get the nutrients into your body that are essential to maintain your health and vitality. That's why I'm religious about taking my daily capsules, and so should you. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I'm talking about the case against voter ID and the sheer preposterousness of making a big fuss over something that is required in innumerable other contexts, not to mention the racist condescension of assuming that just because those of us are people of color, oh, they're so dumb, they can't get an ID, they've just got to be able to show up and vote because, you know, the minorities, what do we expect? We can't make it hard for them because, you know, they have to use an ID in other contexts, but in this one, voting, I mean, voting is a constitutional right, the more the better. Who cares if we get some illicit votes in the process? Count every vote. Now, what amazes me is the way in which the corporate sector is being recruited to sort of play along here, because I think what this really shows politically is that the Republican Party needs to be and really is done with these characters. The Republican Party, by the way, has been the traditional defender of these corporations. And I think we're seeing in the way that they've turned on us that this is not our team. So what this means politically, I think, is that we go whole hog in being the party of the working man, of the middle class and of the working class. And by the way, I mean this in a multiracial sense. We go after the white working class and the black working class and the Latino working class. Notice that Trump made inroads into both the Latino and black working class with this concept of a multiracial coalition. Now, here's a couple of senior executives of Citibank. Again, Citibank, why are they getting involved in this? But here we go. As an American, says Chief Financial Officer Mark Mason of Citibank, I'm appalled at the recent voter suppression laws passed in the state of Georgia. And here is Edward Schuyler, the head of global public affairs at Citibank. We strongly oppose efforts to undermine the ability of Americans to avail themselves of this fundamental right. Now, I suppose, strictly speaking, that an ID requirement imposes a condition, but it's a reasonable condition. That's the heart of the matter. It's a reasonable condition to validate the votes and make sure that the guy who's casting the vote should be the one casting the vote, and it's not someone else. Here is Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer talking on the same lines. This has now become a national, it seems like everyone got the memo. The Democrats got the memo, the corporate guys got the memo. So here is Whitmer basically singing this out of the same choir book. Listen.
And it is unacceptable. And so if and when those bills get to my desk and they're aimed at making it harder for people to vote, they will get vetoed.
Well, it's a little hard for me to listen to her. You know why? What the heck is Fauci doing in the background? Was that a Fauci pillow I saw? I think it was. Debbie right here is... I'm a little sorry to say, a little bit of a Fauci fan, but she soured on Fauci a little when Fauci was like, yeah, you know, we shouldn't play with our children and so on. But then, of course, when you have the Black Lives Matter protests, you have the Antifa protests, Debbie noticed Fauci was mysteriously silent. And you notice that he's mysteriously silent right now. Why? Look what's happening in the border. Look at all those pictures and video of all those adults and kids cramped into overcrowded conditions. They're one on top of the other. They're inches from each other. No one's been tested. I mean, talk about the easy opportunity for massive transmission. But because it's the Biden administration, here's what Fauci's had to say on the matter. Nothing. Nothing. So there's Fauci, you know, grinning on Gretchen Whitmer's pillow. Ooh, I've become a cultural symbol. But, you know, the truth of it is we'd have a little more respect for that little ogre if he was a little more consistent. That's not a whole lot to ask. But anyway, turning to Gretchen Whitmer, her basic idea is you can't make it harder to vote. Any bill that makes it harder to vote will be vetoed, even if such a bill makes the vote count more accurate. So the issue here isn't, does it make it harder? Obviously, ID requirements make it harder to travel. Obviously, requiring ID makes it harder to buy alcohol. It makes it harder to get a doctor's appointment without producing your ID. It's harder to get money out of a bank when you have to produce your ID. But it is not an onerous requirement, and the security requirement behind it is legitimate. So the key point here is legitimacy. Now, one thing I got to say, and this is a good sign, is that the Republicans are striking back at Delta. The GOP House in Georgia decided, you know what? Delta gets all these tax breaks in Georgia worth millions of dollars based upon travel and fuel and so on. You know what? Let's start targeting those. Goodbye tax breaks. Why should Delta get this subsidy when they're turning against Georgia, the state of Georgia, the elected representatives of Georgia? Those are the people who speak for Georgia. Not this Ed Bastian character, yet he purports to do it. And so the GOP is like, okay, we'll teach you a lesson, to quote a GOP leader. You don't feed a dog that bites your hand. Boom. Now, of course, in the Washington Post, here is Greg Sargent. The GOP attack on Delta reveals an ugly side to the culture war. Translation, we're doing something right. We know we're doing something right when Greg Sargent and the Washington Post is all upset about it. It reveals an ugly side of the culture war. Good. We want them to be screaming constantly. When the left is shouting and screaming, you know you're doing something right. In fact, a good way to operate when dealing with the left, find out what makes them shout and scream and upset, and do that repeatedly, unceasingly. That's a very simple, effective strategy, and we've got to learn to enjoy it. Well, by and large, the party, the nice guys, so we're like, oh, you know, I don't know if I really want to be laughing at someone else's misery, you know, schadenfreude. It's a very disagreeable emotion. Actually, no, I've experienced it. It's very enjoyable. When I saw Preet Bharara, my prosecutor, kicked off, you know, he had this big office, he's directing all these, suddenly he's out. Gone. Fired. Goodbye. Now he's at some small dark cubicle at NYU, scratching his head and waiting for a student to show up and, you know, eating gulab jamuns, you know, with his hands. And so, you know, I'm like, karma! You know, here I am doing a podcast and there you are, Preet. When is my student going to show up? Gulab jamuns. You know, it's great. It's a great feeling. I recommend it. She's one of the most powerful voices for faith, family, and freedom, someone I respect, a friend of mine, Candace Owens. Candace has joined the powerful lineup at The Daily Wire, launching a new show where talk show meets late night. She'll continue to call out leftist lies on the corruption of the media and big tech. Join Candace each week as she welcomes powerful voices to talk about the important issues, break down what's actually happening in our country, and trust me, you're going to laugh a lot too. Candace is unfiltered and uncancelable, even as she says all the things others on the right wing are afraid to say. Her full show is available to Daily Wire members only. Use code Dinesh and get 25% off your Daily Wire membership now. I'm really thrilled to welcome to the podcast Sidney Powell. Most of you know about Sidney Powell. She sprang to, well, if she's not a household word, she's close to it, when she appeared alongside Trump in the voter fraud issues. But before that, Sidney Powell was known as the attorney who took the Michael Flynn case when Michael Flynn appeared to be in deep trouble and basically got him off. She got the Justice Department to reverse its decision to go after Flynn. They essentially withdrew their case. And it took a Trump pardon to seal the deal. But this was the stellar work of Sidney Powell. Now, Sidney Powell has been the lead counsel in more than 500 federal appeals, 350 of them as assistant U.S. attorney and appellate section chief in the Western and Northern Districts of Texas. She's past president of the American Academy of Appellate Lawyers and the Bar Association of the Federal Fifth Circuit. By the way, she's also the author of a very interesting book called License to Lie, Exposing Corruption at the Department of Justice. So I mention all this because Sidney Powell has had decades as a successful and effective and well-respected lawyer. Sidney, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I want to talk about all the stuff that we're, quote, not supposed to talk about, which is crazy. We're in a country where we can't discuss relevant and important issues because somehow they pose a threat, or at least the digital moguls have decided that we can't. But we're going to. So let's start where I want to start, which is that the left is now jubilantly claiming, I just saw Jake Tapper on CNN, that after insisting for weeks that there was widespread fraud in the election, in fact, that Trump won the election, won it decisively, now, in the context of the most recent case, your attorneys have filed a brief that says, quote, no reasonable person would conclude that the statements made by you, were truly statements of fact. So the argument is, and Jake Tapper acted like this was a big win for his side, that you're now saying that this was mere opinion, while many people for a long time thought you were saying, as a matter of fact, that there was in fact widespread fraud and enough to make the difference in the 2020 election. So are you backtracking from what you said before?
Oh, no, I am not backtracking a bit. What they are misquoting from and taking out of context is a statement from a new decision out of the D.C. Circuit that is binding in my case. And it's not what I said at all. No, I firmly believe everything I said was true. It was based on thousands of pages of affidavits, expert reports, mathematical analysis that cannot be challenged, statistical work that cannot be challenged. I mean, the data does not lie. And so there was, in fact, massive widespread fraud through this election, and Donald Trump should be president right now. In fact, if the law were applied correctly, he is.
So you're not taking any of it back. You're not taking refuge in the distinction between fact and opinion. It seems to me what you're saying is, yes, I have the opinion that there was widespread fraud, but this is not an opinion free-floating in the ether. It's an opinion anchored in a whole bunch of testimonies, affidavits, all types of evidence, statistical evidence, and so on. It's opinion that is rooted in fact. Because here there's an article, I'm quoting now, this is from NBC News, ex-Trump attorney Sidney Powell's week-long campaign to invalidate the results of the weeks-long campaign to invalidate the results of the 2020 election was not based in fact, her lawyers said Monday. And that is, you're saying that's simply bad reporting. That's not what your lawyers said, and that's not what you believe.
Exactly. That's a bald-faced lie. It is a complete mischaracterization of what we said in our pleading and what I believe and know to be the truth. I'm not backing up one inch. Everything I said about Dominion, I had a factual basis for. Any reasonable person looking at the evidence I've seen would have to come to the same conclusion. And I would encourage people to go to my website, sidneypowell.com, and look at that evidence themselves. We uploaded it, all the pleadings, to the website, and people can read it themselves or at defendingtherepublic.org.
Now, let's talk about the fraud itself, because for someone like me, who's an outside spectator, watching this as a commentator and just as an analyst, I saw multiple hearings. I saw hearings in Arizona, hearings in Michigan, hearings in Pennsylvania, in which people who were in a position to know, either witnesses or GOP officials, came forward and provided what I thought was pretty convincing, pretty riveting testimony. But here's a question I had throughout the whole process. There's fraud here and there's fraud there, but how much does it add up to? In other words, is there sufficient fraud to have overturned the result. Because, of course, Biden didn't just win by like one state, as was the case, say, in 2000, where it all came down to Florida. It was Bush versus Gore. It was a few hundred votes either way. This was a case where Biden claimed to win by tens of thousands of votes in Pennsylvania and pretty decisively, even in Georgia. So here's my question. Have you sort of done the math in which you put these cases together so that you can say not just that there was fraud or even widespread fraud, but there was enough fraud to make it clear that the outcome should have been different?
Oh, yes. We have done the math, and more math is coming. For example, in Georgia, the vote difference was only approximately 11,000 votes. Georgia itself just admitted that 400,000 ballots can't properly be accounted for. 400,000 ballots. They not only ran an algorithm in the machine to shave votes, which their own manual admits they can do. So they weighted Biden votes at, say, 1.26, and they weighted Trump votes at 0.74. So a Trump vote only counted like 3/4, and a Biden vote counted 1 1/4. That ran standard across the country, as best we can tell, from the evidence we're collecting. And then there was specific flipping of votes in any number of key states and cities. In fact, if you think about it, they really only had to take over 6 key cities, all of which happened to be Democratic strongholds, to flip this election for Biden. And we're gathering more evidence every day of how the votes were flipped and where and how many.
We're going to be back and talk in more detail about not just the fraud of people voting without proper registration, but machine fraud. So the left is trying to cancel Dr. Seuss, which gave Mike Lindell of MyPillow a really good idea. Make a commercial in the Dr. Seuss style, a kind of tribute to Dr. Seuss. Listen.
Welcome to Sleepyville, where no one sleeps deeply. The pillows are bad and the sheets are made cheaply. But there is one family in the Sleepyville town that uses my pillow for the best sleep around. My pillows are adjustable for proper alignment, and the Giza sheets breathe so they feel no confinement. So order my pillow for great sleep refinement.
Why are they so chipper?
Their co-workers wondered.
So much energy and zest, like they've had the best slumber.
And when they peeked in the window, the secret was clear. My Pillow sheets, pillows, and mattress toppers appeared. My Pillow is breathable and lasts more than 10 years. It's washable and dryable and was manufactured right here. Giza cotton is what makes the softest of sheets, and the mattress topper helps support pressure points for deep, dreamy sleep. So click the link below to stop counting sheep.
We want my pillow!
The citizens of Sleepyville cried, but they didn't realize the family had a surprise inside. They were all given a my pillow to keep. We spend a third of our life snoozing, so let's make it quality sleep.
Yeah! I got towels, too.
And mine are blue.
So welcome to my Pillowville, where everyone sleeps on the pillows that align and the softest of sheets. With the support of the mattress topper, the people snooze deep and wake up well-rested, and their deadlines they keep. So if your bed feels like rocks and your sheets feel like Brillo, you need better sleep, which means you need my pillow.
Yeah, I love that. What a way to push back on cancel culture using humor to do it. Hey, listen, if you want to get MyPillow merchandise at a steep discount, call 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com. Just make sure to use promo code Dinesh. Back with Sidney Powell. Sidney, you were saying a moment ago that the fraud we're talking about isn't just the fraud of people out of state voting or perhaps a dead man's name showing up on the rolls. We're talking here about machine fraud, and you mentioned two things, flipping votes, and the other is this notion of weighing a vote. Now, let me just be, I don't understand this all that well, so I want to be really clear what you're saying. You're saying that these votes are fed into a machine, and the machine is making a tabulation, but instead of counting each vote as one, which it is, one vote, What it's doing is it is counting a Biden vote as, let's say, 1.25 or whatever you said, and a Trump vote as less than one. And in the aggregate, obviously, when you do this again and again and again, you end up, in a sense, rigging the vote. Am I correctly stating what happened in 2020?
Yes, that is exactly what happened in 2020.
Now, how could it happen? In other words, are these machines not audited in advance? I mean, in any counting system, you know, I know that they do counting, for example, in Vegas and so on. And then in Vegas, we know when you walk into a casino that there are odds and so on. But what you're talking about is these machines were apparently sold to these state officials. The state officials decided, yeah, let's sign up for this machine. Did they know? Could they have known that this could go on? And if so, isn't this an existential threat to our democracy to have counting systems in a democracy that aren't actually doing real counting?
It is beyond a threat to our democracy. It effected a coup of the government of this country without firing a single shot. Some officials, I'm sure, knew exactly what the machines could do. The manual itself describes it. Some, I would think, did not. It would take a federal criminal investigation, which should have been happening since the day after the election, to figure that out, because there are scads of evidence out there on it and people who know about it. We have evidence that the algorithm itself was done in Serbia and by the Dominion people in Serbia, and then loaded into the machines. We have evidence that the machines were connected to the internet during the entire voting process when they should not have been at all. In fact, that itself is a violation and should invalidate every vote reported from the machines. It's really stunning what they managed to do here, Dinesh, and absolutely terrifying. People around the world know it. In fact, I had people contact me because they saw the counting stop, and they knew that when the counting stopped election night, which, by the way, is completely unprecedented. The only time counting ever stopped any election night before was the Hanging Chad problem in Florida that was the subject of the Bush versus Gore Supreme Court decision. That's the only time, and that was in one county in Florida. If you'll recall here, counting stopped simultaneously in six states. That is because Trump voters turned out in such high numbers, it broke the algorithm. The votes were so far over for Trump that they had to stop counting and then use the fraudulent ballots and other means to backfill the vote.
So in other words,
they had planned for that contingency. That's what the mail-in ballot scam was to help cover. And we have evidence that hundreds of thousands of fake ballots were trucked to different places to be on location as needed.
So, Sydney, what you're saying here, though, is that when you say the word they, this would have to be a coordinated operation from start to finish.
Exactly.
And now, do you know... Who is the head of the snake? In other words, who coordinated? Was this the DNC? Was this a group of cunning lawyers? Was this Soros? In other words, who did it? Is there a way to find out, or would it take an investigation to uncover precisely who put this into place?
We're making a lot of progress in finding out who put this into place, but do we have the head of the snake for sure? I don't know. We do know there was foreign interference in the election. There was scads of it. There's evidence of hacking being done from China substantially, and that resulting in votes being changed. We have scads of evidence of foreign interference in the election, all of which the government has both ignored and or denied. It was widespread. It was well-funded. It was planned in advance. It was completely well-orchestrated. And why the Department of Justice and the CISA agency and the FBI have not done their jobs here is beyond terrifying.
I want to come back to why we haven't had a forum to air this case or hear it. I want to do that in the next segment. But I want to ask you one more question in this one, and that is, with the machines, one can infer that the machines are programmed or rigged in some way through the calculation of statistical anomalies. So when a statistical anomaly becomes ridiculous, unbelievable, you might say, you can then presume that some funny business went on with the machine. But what I want to ask you is, has there been any sort of audit that goes beyond statistics? It isn't just that this is an improbable result, but here's the machine. We get to look inside the machine and see how or when or where the vote swapping took place. Have you had a chance to actually, you may say, with expert eyes, get your eyes on a Dominion machine or a Smartmatic machine and be able to see how exactly this occurs?
Only in Antrim County, Michigan. And the report on that and a case on that are still being litigated in Antrim County, Michigan. The report on that was absolutely devastating. It confirmed everything we were saying. And we know that votes were flipped there. They claimed it was human error, but that is impossible when you look at the actual report and the machines themselves. And Mike Lindell has a new video out featuring Dr. Franks, who identified the way they calculated the algorithm off the 2010 census. And it tracks identically. He's done an amazing analysis. He teaches gifted students, so he explains it in a way that people can understand. And I would encourage everyone to go to Mike Lindell TV and watch the new video that just came out yesterday or day before by Dr. Franks with Mike Lindell on the very issue of the algorithm.
When we come back, I want to discuss with Sidney Powell why these claims, well-founded claims or claims that have a lot of evidentiary support, none of this evidence, it appears, was ever heard in a proper forum. So what is the proper forum and why hasn't the case been aired? When we come back. Do you feel the urge to push back against the leftist media narrative of the cops being your enemy? If you support our American law enforcement, I want to share with you a very special and very stylish new way to show that you have the back of the police. Eggert Watch's CEO Elon is an unapologetic supporter of police and is taking a very strong stance against the defund the police movement. He designed a commemorative police watch that is beautiful. I noticed special details like the engraving and the quote on the back Elon shared with me that in consulting with officers on the watch design, they asked for an image of St. Michael on the piece. Eggert Watches gives away 15% of all sales from this model to police charities. If you haven't seen Elon's Speak Truth short film on this topic, it's a must watch and you can currently find it on the Eggert website. Remember to apply this podcast's unique promo code Dinesh to your police watch order so you can save over $30 at checkout. Visit EggertWatches.com, EGARDWatches.com to make your order. It's time we support companies that stand up for what we believe in, and Eggert is a company I'm proud to recommend. Back with Sidney Powell. Sidney, there's been an effort, of course, to smear you and make it sound like you're an extremist, you're a kook, your claims have been discredited. I've never seen an interview with you in which you came across remotely like that. So you never match the descriptions that your critics are trying to foist upon you. But here's a question I think that really baffles people to this day, and that is that why is it the case that there was never any forum? In other words, if it isn't going to be the Supreme Court, maybe it's another court, or maybe it should be the legislature. I recognize that the Constitution directs the state legislatures to set up the systems of voting, but A, what is the proper forum to air claims of election fraud? And second, if these claims were presented in the proper forum, why weren't they heard? And what's going on? Is our system so corrupt all the way up that even legitimate legal claims in a democratic society are not given a fair hearing? What's going on in America?
I think that is the terrifying answer, Dinesh. It certainly floored me. I just couldn't be more concerned and disappointed in our federal judicial system and the Department of Justice itself, even in the Trump administration, for its refusal to look at these issues. The word came down from high up in the Department of Justice that nothing was going to be done about any of this. They know it exists. They have the evidence. They have not only refused to do anything about it, they have put the kibosh on anyone else's efforts to do anything about it.
So when Barr was saying, I'm sending out the FBI to investigate these cases, was that, and then he said we found, or he implied we found no significant or systematic evidence of fraud. You're saying that they actually know different, but they know differently. They know that there was, but for whatever reason they decided. So does that mean that Trump himself, in a sense, was always in a precarious position? Because, see, I thought he never controlled his Justice Department for like the first 2.5 years, but you're saying he never controlled his Justice Department at all.
I don't think he ever did control his Justice Department at all. I don't think he controlled his White House. He certainly didn't control his White House counsel. He had the power and the means and the right to do what was needed to save our republic before he left office, and he didn't do it. Anytime he apparently issued an order for something to be done, the people around him countermanded that. And I don't know, he allowed that to happen. I don't know how this happened, Dinesh. It's absolutely unfathomable to me.
I mean, you were there with Trump, and you probably said to Trump, or did you, hey, you should do X, Y, and Z. You have the right to seize control of these machines, demand a kind of independent audit, see what's going on, get to the bottom of this.
I did. And it only would have taken action in 6 cities or even less by the federal agents that are authorized to do it. And nobody would do it. The Department of Justice literally put the word out from on high that nothing was going to be done about any of this, and had U.S. attorneys all across the country stand down and stop their investigations, what few had started.
I mean, we know enough about Trump, you and I do, that he hates to lose. I think he genuinely believes he won.
He did win.
Yeah, and you're saying that.
I have no doubt about it.
And you're saying.
No doubt about it whatsoever. He won this election fair and square. 80 million people at least poured out to vote for Trump and for freedom. I mean, freedom is what they were really voting for.
And
freedom
why,
versus this fascism and totalitarianism and communism that we're looking at every day, the abject destruction of the United States of America and the Republic that we dearly love, that the world looks to for hope in every respect. They are destroying that by the minute. But that's why we experience this coup. We're dealing with evil far greater and in a far bigger magnitude than any of us ever realized was in this country.
But here you have Trump, and he warned about it. He warned before the election that there was going to be all kinds of shenanigans. He warned about the mail-in ballots. It seems like he knew what was coming. And I have two questions about that. One, why was the GOP, the Republican Party, caught napping? It seems like the Republican Party focused exclusively on the campaign and the Democrats focused exclusively on the election. They didn't even bother to campaign. They were, in a sense, what you're saying is that they were laying out the mechanism to control the actual counting process. Republicans seem to have let that go and then afterwards screamed. But then when Trump was in a position to do some, why do you think Trump had this failure of nerve? I don't understand it.
I don't understand it either, other than he was surrounded by people telling him to stop, to quit, that he could not do what the law allowed him, in fact, frankly, required him to do to save the republic. They were shutting him down from every direction. What upsets me about him is that he allowed them to do that. He should have fired everyone around him the day after the election, if necessary, to save the Republic of the United States of America.
So to that degree, you're deeply disappointed even in Trump.
Yes.
When we come back,
beyond disappointed in the Department of Justice.
When we come back, I want to pick all this up and talk to Sidney Powell about the what we're living through now, a regime of thought control and censorship that seems to be a vicious collaboration between government entities and powerful private companies. that work in cahoots with the government when we come back. We're all looking for good movies we like to see. There's a new one out that I want you to see. It's called Church People, and it's a comedy that will leave you laughing out loud while ultimately reminding you of the true meaning of the gospel. Here's a clip. Listen.
I told you if we broke attendance records, I'd get the church logo tattooed on my arm.
Skip, remember back when we first started?
All we did was preach the gospel.
Ooh, Superman works. I like Superman. Guy, what do you think?
What happened to you?
Me? Your dad is the one with the gimmicks.
The power of the Holy Spirit propels us.
I just want the church to get back to the gospel.
Problem is, you're trying to get your message across.
The gospel?
Right. And ain't nobody listening to that.
Hey, it's really perfect for Easter weekend. Debbie and I watched. It's really fun. Watch Church People at salemnow.com. That's S-A-L-E-M, salemnow.com. Use my promo code Dinesh at the checkout for a special discount. I'm talking to Sidney Powell about these eye-opening claims about voter fraud, about Trump, about the Department of Justice. Sidney, we were talking a moment ago about, I raised the issue of the GOP. And here's the Republican Party that would have a vested interest in winning the election and yet seems to have been either caught napping, or do you think that the GOP was to some degree complicit, part of the problem, part of the swamp? Which is it?
The GOP was part of the swamp. There is a massive rhino population of swamp dwellers in the GOP and, frankly, in the Trump campaign. Neither the campaign nor the RNC were interested in challenging the results of the election. Everybody just wanted to pack it up and go home. What few challenges were made were perfunctory at best for show, if nothing else, but were not meaningful or designed to win. It was just the most horrible situation I've ever personally witnessed.
I mean, what
in
makes
the application
this
of the law or any sort of pursuit of truth or justice? There was none except by our contingency and a few others.
So the GOP was raising tens of millions of dollars claiming that it would fight, it would investigate.
They raised hundreds of millions of dollars. And very little of it was spent doing anything at all.
So a lot of the rot, you're saying, is in the party itself. It's
completely.
Not just, yeah. Let me pivot a little bit, talk about this issue of censorship, because I think that this is taking a very bad situation and making it 50 times, not 10, but 50 times worse, because it's bad enough to be talking about whether our democracy is imperiled by systematic fraud. It's another thing to say you can't even discuss it. In other words, this is actually not the America that I emigrated to, coming as an exchange student at the age of 17 in the late 1970s. The two parties had differences, but the idea that you couldn't speak your mind, that somehow you couldn't participate in political debate on relevant issues, that you would be kicked out of the so-called public forum. I mean, this would have seemed inconceivable to me, and yet this is the America we're living through. And my question is, how did we get here? Is this part of the same rot extended out now into the culture? Is it all part of one, you may say, tarantula with multiple tentacles? Or is this a separate problem of these arrogant digital moguls who are in bed with the Democrats and are essentially covering up? Or do they honestly believe that, wow, this is all misinformation, we're doing a public service by sanitizing it? What's going on here with the censorship, and how did we get here?
It's all part of the plan and the cover-up. It has to be, because they were involved in effectuating the plan. Zuckerberg donated over $400 million to the voting efforts, particularly in the key cities where the fraud was the most rampant. And of course, you know, Dorsey and everybody were shutting down any sort of dissent on Twitter. I got thrown off almost immediately after the election. I had 1.3 million followers, I think, all of which, and those were heavily suppressed, not to mention all the shadow banning and all of that went on. But yeah, they threw me off, I think, a day or two after they terminated the president's account. And I knew that was coming too. I knew they were going to cut the president off as soon as they possibly could. And nothing was done about that. And there was plenty of authority to deal with that also.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that now, was the 2016 election a surprise? Because it seems like if anyone who has the power, culturally, politically, to orchestrate a coup of the manner you describe could have done it in 2016, presumably. Is it the case that they thought that Hillary was safe and they were caught napping, you might say, and then they go, wow, this guy Trump got in by mistake. We need to fix the system in such a way that this will never... Is that what happened? How else did Trump win in 2016?
I think it was a pure accident that he won in 2016. I think they ran the algorithm in 2016, thought they had calculated enough and miscalculated and didn't have a backup plan. But this time they had the backup plan and they executed it. And COVID was a great cover for the mail-in ballots, a disease that has a 99.8% cure rate, I think, that they're now still trying to base a national emergency and mandatory vaccinations on. Horse feathers. People are dying from those vaccinations already. They're not even telling people it's not FDA approved. It's all part of their orchestrated effort to destroy this country and make it just another country in the world that's controlled by the globalist elites for the benefit of their power and their wealth. The Nancy Pelosi's and the Chuck Schumer's and the Joe Biden's and the Kamala Harris and the Clinton crowd and the Obama crowd writ large.
Sydney, you mentioned what I think is the most striking anomaly from the election, which was the stopping of the count. But two more things jumped to my mind as I think about that. A second anomaly was the fact that Biden never even seemed to campaign very hard. I mean, this guy would campaign a couple of hours a day, then he'd put a lid on it. It's almost like he was going through the motions. And in retrospect, that would make sense if he felt that he had it in the bag. Well, I campaign because we have got the process under control. A second thing is that when Amy Coney Barrett came up in her hearings, the Democrats were very insistent that she recuse herself in any post-election scrutiny of what might happen. Remember, the election hadn't even occurred, but the Democrats were curiously emphatic. Hey, Amy Coney Barrett, will you tell us right now that you're going to step aside? So my question is, Is it the case that in retrospect, those facts now make more sense? But that only raises this question, and that is we now have what we thought was a 6-3 majority on a Republican Supreme Court. How did the Supreme Court sort of turn its go Pontius Pilate on us and wash its hands off this matter?
We have witnessed the complete institutional failure of every arm of government and every law enforcement institution in this country to enforce the rule of law, Dinesh. It is that stunning and that heartbreaking. Why they did that, I don't know. I do know that the Communist Party has bought a number of people. It has threatened a number of people. It has blackmailed a number of people. In fact, there's a YouTube video of a Chinese professor talking recently about how they controlled virtually everyone in D.C. except President Trump. And now he's gone. George Soros does have a huge role in all of this. The organizations he funds and has been funding for a long time have played a substantial role in all of this. We are under attack. We have been under attack since the Chinese flu virus was released, if not before. And it simply converted into a significant cyber attack. And this whole plan to destroy the United States and take control of it and just render it another global entity or vessel state of China, almost, if not completely.
So, Sydney, what is your verdict? I mean, my wife, Debbie, who's from Venezuela, has always had the fear. You can almost call it, a kind of PTSD. I've seen this before. I saw it in Venezuela. She was actually incredulous when she discovered that the same machines developed by Venezuelans to cheat in Venezuela were being used. She could hardly believe it. She's been talking about parallels. She thought she was making a kind of analogy, but she never dreamed it would be the same companies, the same machines. Does this suggest that we are very close, in your view, to becoming a big Venezuela? And if so, would that be curtains for the United States of America?
Yes, we are very close to that. That's what they intend. That's what they want. It simply gives them more power and more control. They're trying to destroy the middle class. All the COVID restrictions and business closures was designed to do that. It's worked very well. The more dependent they can make anyone on crumbs from the government, the more control they have. What they fear the most is an independent, strong middle class. And that is what they've set about to destroy. And they've done a hell of a lot of damage in that regard in the last 2 years. Damage I never thought we'd see able to be done even in the United States of America. But yet they've done it. And too many people have been sheep or asleep at the switch or whatever and allowed it to happen.
Sidney Powell, thank you for joining me for what has turned out to be an extremely sobering, if not chilling, assessment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dinesh. And I would encourage everybody to go to defendingtherepublic.org and look at the documents yourselves, including the affidavit from the young man from Venezuela who saw how all this was done and was by Hugo Chavez's side when it was created and watched it work. We are dealing with the exact same thing here now.
Thank you, Sidney Powell.
Thank you.
Do you think our nation's economy is going to be insulated from Biden's planned massive tax increases? Think again. There's only one way to protect your savings. Do what over 10,000 other smart investors have and convert a portion of your retirement accounts into gold and silver with Birch Gold. When inflation hits, and it will, gold and silver are your safe haven. And Birch Gold Group is the company I trust to help you convert an IRA or eligible 401k into an IRA backed by gold and silver. Through April 30th on qualifying purchases, when you buy physical gold or silver or open a precious metals IRA with Birch Gold, they will send you a free home safe. Text Dinesh to 484848 for your free information kit on precious metals IRAs or to speak with a Birch Gold representative today. With 10,000 customers, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and they can help you too. Text Dinesh to 484848 for your free safe with qualifying purchase. Today is Good Friday, the day that Christ hung on the cross. Now, I noticed that for Christians, you have, in a sense, three groups of Christians. You have the Christmas Christians, the Good Friday Christians, and the Easter Christians. And I'm referring here to three different sensibilities. The Christmas Christians, the ones who really love Christmas, love the idea of God becoming man. God, you may say, coming down to earth and becoming part of the lives of his creation. And these are family people. They love the celebration of Christmas. They look at the gifts as a form of appreciation for things that they have received and blessings that they've gotten through the year. And then there are the Good Friday Christians. And the Good Friday Christians are people who have a deep awareness of sin in the world, of how corrupt not only our world is, but we are, that there's a bent, warped aspect to human nature, and that this requires atonement. It requires correction. Now, many people say, well, why do we need a redeemer to atone? Why do we need the substitutionary atonement of Christianity? I remember reading, this was Richard Dawkins, the atheist. He goes, atonement, the central doctrine of Christianity, is vicious, sadomasochistic, and repellent. So the idea here is he can't understand why Christ has to die for us. Well, why can't we atone for ourselves? Why can't we atone? Why can't we make good in our own sins? Well, my question is, how would we do that? Let's say you've done some bad things and a few horrible things in your life. How would you actually atone for them? You can't. You can say, well, I won't do them again. Well, that's not atonement. You shouldn't be doing them again in the first place. Atonement means correcting the effects, making whole the things you did, putting the people that you harmed back in the position that they were before you harmed them. Can you do that? You can't. So the bottom line of it is either we can't atone or somebody has to atone for us. And God, who is perfection, not only in the Christian scheme, in every scheme, God requires perfection, the purification of the human soul before we can enter the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. And so the substitutionary atonement becomes a necessity. A pastor that I knew in San Diego actually used to put it very well. He goes, Christ paid a debt he didn't owe because we owe a debt we cannot pay. And then there are the Easter Christians. And the Easter Christians celebrate the resurrection. They look forward to the life everlasting. They place their Christian hope in the notion of a better life to come. And of course, it is Christ's atonement that is the necessary, and death, that is the necessary prerequisite to the resurrection. If Christ didn't die, he couldn't be resurrected. And Christ's resurrection, we have to remember, it wasn't just a sort of a singular event. It's an event that paves the way for our resurrection. Because if you read scripture carefully, it's very clear that we too are resurrected. And by the way, not just resurrected in the sense that our souls make their way into heaven or hell, but there is a bodily resurrection. Now, what those bodies are like, resurrected bodies, they might be completely different than anything that we experience here on earth. But the Bible does clearly promise a physical, a bodily resurrection. Heaven is actually made up of resurrected bodies. I think all of this shows, if you will, the way in which Christianity answers some of the deepest problems that we have in the world, and also has a wide range, accommodates a wide range of temperaments. The Christmas Christian who celebrates family and gift giving and coming together, the Good Friday Christian who understands the omnipresence of sin, how sin is, how it structures our personalities, how it turns us away from God. And by the way, sin here isn't just you did something that said you shouldn't have done according to the Ten Commandments. No. Sin basically means choosing your way over God's way. God has a plan for your life. Every time you reject that plan and do something else, whatever that something else is, that's sin. That's actually why Christ had to die. And so when we sin, we've always got to remember that our sins are adding to the loneliness of Calvary. Fortunately, and this is the Christian doctrine of the fortunate fall, fortunately, Christ dying for us cleanses us of sin if we accept his sacrifice and paves the way for Easter, a joyous celebration. Dante called his book The Divine Comedy because it has a happy ending, and we have a happy ending if we will embrace it, the happy ending ultimately of being redeemed of our sins and coming together permanently, eternally with God through the miracle of the resurrection.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.